Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin, the auto editor here at HowStuffWorks.com.
And my name is Ben Bolin. I write some videos, hang out with Scott and our listeners.
And you do cool stuff.
I do. You know what? I have done a couple cool things in my time.
Yes, you have.
As of you, look at you, right?
A few.
Globetrotter. Every time we're not in
the... Got the scars to prove it.
Yes. Mental as well.
That's right.
Every time we're not actually recording, I just assume that you are off on another amazing adventure.
That's right. In my Evel Knievel, what do you call that, jumpsuit?
I would call it your Evel Knievel jumpsuit,
yeah.
Probably. I'm not very creative.
Me either. I don't know. I've been thinking about tanks recently.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, because we get a lot of requests for military topics, right?
We do, military, and races, that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. A lot of military vehicle requests. So we thought we'd maybe talk about tanks, and I've been thinking about doing an entire episode about tanks. So here we go.
Yeah, let's ask our producers if we can get some Here We Go music. All right, and we're off.
With the official Here We Go music. So, Ben, you probably know a lot more about tanks than I do.
I'm a military brat, so growing up, it was part of our summer to go to the yards on the bases where they have old tanks, and, you can't fire them. They've stopped up the guns.
Oh, that's too bad.
If you're wondering.
That's
well, you know, in retrospect, it may have been the right choice.
Probably.
For them. Growing up, I saw a lot of tanks, and what always mystified me about tanks, Scott, is... Even as a kid, I thought, why on earth would you want to take this thing into a battle? Because they're so slow.
So cumbersome, just huge, big target, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess there's a long, long history to tanks.
Mm-hmm.
It goes way back, farther than you might think, as usually is the case.
Mm-hmm.
You want to tell me?
Yeah. Well, actually, it goes back to one of our old friends, who you may recognize.
Go ahead.
No, you do it.
No.
Last time I mentioned him.
No. Go ahead.
All
please.
Right.
I insist.
Leonardo da Vinci.
Of course.
Of course.
Yeah, of course.
And he didn't, I don't think he actually built his tank.
Nope. Sketched again. But initial idea was Leonardo da Vinci, once again. Amazing, isn't it?
Hundreds of years. Was this guy a time traveler?
I don't know.
Was he secretly a time traveler?
I don't know. He just had some really great ideas.
Well, we had to drop a mention of our good buddy Leo there, but let's go past the beginning. Like, we're fast-forwarding through the movie of Tank Evolution.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to take it to World War II. Do you have any pre-World War?
I got way pre-World War II. Something called a Caterpillar tank was developed in 1770.
Ah, yes, the Caterpillar.
Yeah, 1770. And this is Richard Edgeworth. Mm-hmm. Who used it in the Crimean War, which is a steam-powered vehicle used to just kind of maneuver, whatever they needed into the battlefield.
Yeah.
This is extremely primitive use of a tank-like device. It's not really what we think of as a tank.
It's more like an armored vehicle.
Kind of. Again, steam-powered.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't at all what you would think of as a modern tank, really.
Yes,
okay,
you know,
it's not a driving shooting type thing. It was more of a carrier, really.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, once you move up into it didn't really much go too far from there.
Yeah.
Beyond that point, until about 1914. You know, why 1914 significant?
Why is 1914 significant?
Beginning of World War One.
Ah, yes.
Now that's when people started thinking, like, you know, how am I going to breach this this front?
Because trench warfare.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So how am I going to get past this trench? I mean, they had these strongholds all over the place, and it's like, well, how are we going to defeat this? Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a couple of guys, and I'm going to shuffle my notes as I promised I would. a British Army colonel named Ernest Swinton and William Hankey.
Howdy ho.
Secretary of the Committee for Imperial Defense. That was a terrible Mr. Hankey impression.
Do you want to redo?
I don't know.
Okay.
Well, no. I'll hit it later.
We'll fix it in post.
Yeah, that was bad.
I thought that was better. Not. I thought it was.
Howdy ho!
There we go.
That's it. Okay, we'll stick with that one.
We'll stick with that one.
So, anyways, they according to this article, they came up with the idea of an armored vehicle with these conveyor-like, you know, mm-hmm. tracks, these belts,
yeah,
that would be able to break through enemy lines and go over all kinds of different terrain, and you know, be able to most importantly cross these trenches. Mm-hmm. Because they couldn't get past that point. You know, there's just no beating that. They don't know how many people are in there, what they're up against.
Right.
This allows them to drive right to and over these trenches and then create an opening to you know, send their own infantry in and expose a weakness there. Mm-hmm. So they brought their idea to the British Navy Minister, of all people, uh-huh. who was Winston Churchill. So Winston Churchill's involved in the development of the first tank, really.
Now, Winston Churchill is a European that some of you may recognize.
Maybe.
Possibly.
Yeah, I would hope so. So, at the time, he's serving as the British Navy Minister.
Yeah.
And the idea was that they took it to him in the idea that it's a land boat, is what mm-hmm. they called it, because mm-hmm. it was an armored vehicle. You know, they had armored boats at the time. This is an armored vehicle that could do the same thing, you know, that would just basically barge its way through the line and then create an opening. So they went to him, and of course they began production on this, or not production, but really development of a concept.
Right, R&D.
Yeah, exactly. And that led to a 1915 prototype tank, that's tough,
yeah.
Which they called Little Willie, which came off an assembly line in England. And it weighed 14 tons. Mm-hmm. wasn't very efficient at all. It was really slow. I think it had a top speed of 2 miles per hour. I've written down somewhere here. Mm-hmm. 14 tons. It was slow. It overheated, and it actually got trapped in the trenches. It was just a little too small.
Ouch.
So it would go into the trench and not come back out.
So we're halfway there.
Yeah, they're halfway there. But what that did was that gave them a starting point. Mm-hmm. And they created something that they called Big Willie in 1916, mm-hmm. of course. And Big Willie was able to cross the trenches. And it was a little bit more reliable, not much. Mm-hmm. Bigger engine. You know, it was just a little bit faster. I think it had a top speed of 4 miles per hour or something like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's where it began and developed in World War I, really. And, you know, the French were involved in this. Mm-hmm. They built a lot of tanks. The British, of course, built a lot of tanks. Germans, they were surprised by it during the war, but they didn't buy into the idea of the tanks. So
not yet.
They built, what, 20 of them, I think, is what they said?
Not very many.
By 1918. Mm-hmm. And the U.S. was similar. I think, I've got numbers here somewhere. But, yeah, they said that I think the U.S. had only built, you know, at this point, because they just really heard of it, and they built something like 86 or something like that. It was in the 80s. low numbers, relatively. Yeah. But the Germans, they just weren't buying it at the time. And, you know, later it became very important to them.
Right. And how wrong those Germans were in the offset of World War One to sort of dismiss the tank, because the Willy series, we first see that deployed by the British in the Battle of Somme, I believe, S-O-M-M-E.
Oh, you got me. I was trying to avoid all battle names.
Okay. So from now on, we avoid all battle
names. Yeah, because they're French, and I just can't do it.
So we're so close to the birth, though, of the modern tank, right? And this is the part this is my favorite part of the story, because you know I love a good word pun, mm-hmm. etymology thing.
Of course.
So while they were building these things, during the construction of them and the shipping, they couldn't give away that these were weapons, especially when it got to, I believe, the Middle Eastern, yeah. North African parts of it.
Yeah.
So the way they would ship them, they would call them water tanks, or like tanks. Like they were not – they obviously were enormous,
yeah.
crates, no matter how you do it. And yeah. they're heavy at yeah. this point. So – they have to come up with something that is not, you know, rolling.
Something believable.
Yeah, it can't be like rolling death salesmen or something, you know.
So, wait, they're fooling the people that are shipping these things.
Supposedly.
By calling them tanks. And they buy it because a tank had no other meaning at that point than a vessel.
Well, yeah, that's a little, to me, that's a little convenient, you know. That yeah. might be, I don't know how entirely true that is, because it does kind of beggar belief for someone to constantly be shipping these things mm-hmm. and not check the box.
Yeah, I guess so.
But, you know, we send mail and stuff.
Oh, it's for water, huh? Well, what's the gun for?
Oh, shush.
The giant gun.
It's a water gun.
Yeah,
it's for
sure.
Giant water gun.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so that is kind of the birth of the modern tank. But let's step back for a second and talk about what tanks are. So a tank is – it's like an armored vehicle, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what's the difference between a Hummer and between actually what's the difference between a Hummer and a tank? Well, the difference is obviously noticeable. Tanks are on treads, much slower, but also they're able to navigate a lot of different types of terrain that would be more difficult for a Hummer or another faster wheeled armored vehicle. They're also designed for the front of combat. So with a Hummer or some other faster armored vehicles, they're much more adaptive. Is adaptive the right word?
Yeah,
flexible?
I think so. Sure, flexible is better.
Okay, flexible is better. But tanks are supposed to be up there in the front, blowing things out of the proverbial dirt. Scott and I, you and I have talked about this before, about tanks. I love them. I love reading about them. I would never want to be in one during a battle.
No.
And I think I'm starting to rethink that conclusion, because the more I read about modern tanks, the more I'm learning that it is not quite the death trap I thought it was.
Why so?
Here we go. And I'll get to that.
Oh, okay.
We'll get to that
yep.
at the end. So people will argue about what makes a tank effective. Tanks try to do three things, and they're three contradictory things. So a tank can never do all of them perfectly. A tank wants to have firepower bigger than you could carry on another device or a soldier. A tank wants to be able to protect people and, you know, its perimeter better than a soldier could, or perhaps other vehicles. A tank also wants to be mobile and be able to move this awesome force projection and force of protection somewhere else. A problem with firepower, protection, and mobility, or if you think about it, guns, armor, and movement, is that those three things, past a certain point, kind of start screwing with each other.
Mm-hmm. Lots of weight, right?
Yes, sir. If I could be candid, we talk about weight a lot on this show because it's so important to the effectiveness of a vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we talk about Lil Willie and Big Willie and their massive tonnage, we can already see the problems that come into play when you try to take a thing like that and make it mobile. Let's see. When we design tanks, even now, when we design tanks, we think about these three values, and we think about how we can best get these together. And this part surprised me. When people are building tanks now, when companies and armies build tanks now, what determines the tank that they go with or the design they go with is more often than not the affordability of the design.
Oh, no.
Yeah, because we see this in World War II, I think. A lot of the vehicles where's a good example? Okay, a lot of the vehicles designed by the Allied forces were simple designs, and you could compromise them. You could cut some corners. Not that I'm saying the fighting forces do that, but they did in this point. And they actually outmaneuvered and outnumbered the German tanks at the time, because this is in World War II, you guys, Germany got on the tank wagon.
Ah, so they made more than 20 in World War II then.
Yes.
Okay.
But they were harder to build because they were more expensive. They were well designed.
They were better built.
Right. But they were, you know, but if you are if you're trying to fight another group that has a bunch of less well-designed but infinitely cheaper to produce tanks, you're going to lose out.
Hmm.
And to a way, that's what happens. So now where are we with tanks? Here's where we are, Scott. Now in the modern age, we focus on how to improve a tank's performance by improving the way it integrates in the rest of the battlefield. And by improving the way we still haven't really cracked the riddle of how do you get the best firepower, mobility, and armor on it.
So it's a balancing game between three separate possibilities, I guess.
So
what are they cut armor thickness in which is terrible, but they have to. You know, maybe better materials, though. Maybe better, lighter materials.
There we go.
And which increases mobility, but then maybe they don't have the firepower that they want because it's a lighter vehicle, and then it's not able to have the firepower that it normally would.
Right.
Because it would blow it right back.
Mm-hmm.
Or flip it over or something like that, right?
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing you have to just half a dozen of one. Well, what's that
six
saying?
In one hand, right?
Yeah, there you go. That's like
half dozen in the other.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, it's where can you, if you have to compromise with everything, then in which of those areas or in any can you win?
Yeah, exactly. And you do it, and you have to account for, of course, safety, major concern. Of course, I would hope number one concern. I don't like the fact that you know, the lowest bid comes into the factor into into play in this whole thing.
Yeah.
But I know that's a reality. I know that that happens.
Yeah, it's also very time sensitive. Not to say civilian vehicles are not time sensitive, but usually people won't die as a result.
Yes, yes. And you need to stay one step ahead of the enemy with whatever technology they have.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes even more critical in this case.
I'm still thinking about that earlier podcast we did on the radar guns and radar gun detectors.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I want to point out what I think is a terrible flaw in all tanks.
Oh, please do.
Yeah, let's go ahead. And if you are a tank commander, if you work, one of our coworkers here actually was on a tank crew in Iraq.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so I don't want to offend anybody. I think everybody's pretty sure about this.
Was it you?
No, it was not me. It was not me that I know of. I have had some crazy weekends, but
okay.
I think I would have remembered that one.
All right.
But
was it me? No, it wasn't me.
It was the guy who looks a lot like – no, I'm kidding.
Okay.
But, yeah, so the problem is, of course, we didn't factor this in there. You're never going to see a tank win a hypermiling contest.
No.
That's for sure.
No.
These puppies are thirsty. These engines are thirsty.
Well, how thirsty?
They're so thirsty that our current star tank in the U.S., the M1, which is probably my favorite tank, actually, gets less than 1 mile to the gallon.
Whoa. Really?
Less than 1 mile.
That's a pretty low range.
That is, you know, that is incredibly low.
Well, okay, so that
unbelievably.
That severely hampers them in the ability to go across the line and come back, or out towards the line even and come back. They're just at a certain point they have to turn around no matter what in order to make it back, right?
Right.
I mean, that's the case with any vehicle, of course, but
sure.
That's a really low range. I mean, do you have any idea how many gallons they carry or no?
I might have to take a paper shuffle for
that's,
that.
That's okay.
Actually, you know what, Scott?
If you don't know, that's fine. If it's handy, that's fine too. But
okay. Here we go. I gotcha. Let's see. It holds. The newest one, this is from our awesome article on it in How Stuff Works, the newest one holds 490 gallons.
Okay.
Which means that the tank can move about a little over 260 miles without refueling.
Okay.
So it's a massive tank.
Well, you know, that's a decent range still.
I was
thinking we're talking in the order of 20 miles each way or something.
Oh, goodness.
No, I just had no idea that it had that much fuel. I mean, these things have 1,500 horsepower engines, right?
I mean, they're
massive, massive engines, so I can see why they're pretty thirsty.
They also have a speed of 30 miles an hour.
30 miles an hour.
They can go 30 miles an hour.
Really?
Yes. Which is, just so you know, for the average tank, that is superhuman.
So no kidding. That's like a top speed run there at 30 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And it's impressive, right?
That's impressive.
Well, what about – now, I've got a question for you, and you may or may not know this, too.
All right.
Is it true – is the M1 Abrams the one that is able to – the first one that's able to drive and shoot at the same time? Because I thought there was something at one point in history where they said that you have to stop in order to shoot, and then you're able to move.
You know, I've heard that. I don't know if the M1 is the first one.
Well, you know what?
Is that what you heard?
Perfect opportunity for a listener to write in and tell us if that's true. Because
oh, yeah, guys, write in.
Because I thought I had heard this about the M1 Abrams, is that it was the first one to be able to do that. There may have been one in the past, you know, and you know, some other make and model.
Mm-hmm.
But I really thought that was one of the ones. You know what my dad had this weekend?
Oh, yeah.
I saw my dad at a wedding. We were at a wedding.
Yeah.
I was up in Michigan, and it's in, you know, kind of the area where, you know, there's General Dynamics, and there's a tank plant there. He's done some work in there, you know, freelance work, video writing, that type of thing, producing. And he pulls out this coin that is called a challenge coin, I think. And it has the M1 Abrams tank on it, right?
Uh-huh.
Have you ever heard of a challenge coin?
No.
If you're a member of a group of any kind, now he's got one from several different groups, and this is common, I guess. I didn't know this.
Okay.
He's done work on a lot of different interesting places, but one was on like an icebreaker up on Lake Superior. This one was for the M1 tank guys. He's done one for you know, some other work for the military and other aspects. He's got a few of these things, but you have a challenge coin, and it's a relatively large size coin, like maybe bigger than a silver dollar or silver dollar size.
Okay.
And it's embossed with the picture of the M1 tank, and you know it says, you know, the division and everything, and you know, the armed forces type thing. If you are out to the bar with a group of guys from that area, and they call a challenge, everybody puts their coins out on the table, and if you don't have yours, you're the one buying beer.
I think, really? Is that the whole purpose of it?
That's the whole purpose of it, is that you, if you're not carrying your challenge coin at any time.
At all times?
They can do that at any point and pull out the challenge coins. They just call a challenge, put them out, and anyone who does not have their challenge coin is the one who's buying that night.
Or even if they're out getting coffee or
exactly. That pertains to anything, I guess. And a lot of different groups have this, but just this last weekend, this whole M1 thing came up.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was interesting.
That is weird.
Yeah, I've never heard of a challenge coin, so maybe we should have a HowStuffWorks challenge coin.
Maybe we should get, man, I hate carrying change. Let's make it, can we make it something different?
This is one that you wouldn't spend, though, because it's different. It's like a, you know, like a copper tone or something to it.
Yeah.
It doesn't look anything like a coin.
People wouldn't take it.
No.
But what if I was in a tank when I gave it to them and I leaned out and tossed out the side? They would take it if it was an M1 because I would have a 120-millimeter smoothbore cannon, which is actually made by a German company.
Way to bring it back, Ben.
Hey.
And it's a tanks for the coin.
Yeah. It's let's see. If that didn't scare them, I would also have two different rounds I could put in there, high explosive anti-tank or heat rounds. I would also have a Sabot. I guess that's – maybe – does that come from Sabotage? I think that's related?
Maybe.
I doubt it. That's too –
You mean the Beastie Boys song?
Yes. Yeah. The Beastie Boys song.
Okay. Yeah. See, I know tank talk, you know, I'm kind of on the edge of it. I know very little.
That's the other side of the coin is a picture of the Beastie Boys.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I guess we don't want to go too far down into the M1 tank because we do have an awesome article on this. So I'll leave the weapons for people to discover. We do need to talk about the people that are in a tank.
Yes.
Because just like modern tanks don't go by themselves into the field, you can't just hop in a tank and steal it.
Not yet.
Despite what Grand Theft
Auto. And I don't mean stealing. I mean they don't go in alone.
Yeah, you don't go in alone.
Not that you can steal. Hey, yeah. Well, how many people can a tank hold? They look huge.
Yeah, they change. It depends on the model of the tank. For the M1, we're talking four people.
Four people. Okay, so it's not really transport system then, really. It's just to operate that tank, right?
Yeah, there are armored transport carriers, but they're built in a very different way to move people, you know.
Okay.
This thing is to move force projection. Mm-hmm. So who do you have? You have your driver who sits in the front section of the hull, and he's under the gun. Huh?
Oh, huh? Yeah.
Okay.
So am I.
Sorry. And I really think that's the worst possible position. Because you're sitting back in one of these chairs that reclines, sort of like a chair at a doctor's or a dentist's office.
Okay.
And you're
Sounds
in
all
the
right.
front of the vehicle. I can see how that could get very hectic very quickly, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then but everybody else who works on the tank reportedly says this is by far the best seat in the house. And then you've got the...
I got to admit, dentist chairs are pretty comfy.
They are.
Yeah.
And the only thing comfortable about those places. And the rest of the crew is on the inside of the tank's turret, the turret basket, I guess.
Okay.
And there's a person called the loader.
Very
and
good.
All they do is guess.
Load shells.
Of course, there's a lot more that goes to that. We're not trying to say it's an easy job.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly not. And then there's a gunner on the other side. And the gunner, you would imagine, handles the guns.
Yeah.
And then the commander is on the right side. So the commander is a little bit different because he or she talks to every other tank commander. And that would be on the field. And again, there'll be more than one. And so they use this, they use their communication capabilities to keep them from being the slow kids on the playground. You know what I mean?
Because
mm-hmm. If you just have one tank there now, it'd be difficult to see how that would work. But I was surprised how effective they were. I'll be honest, I was wrong. Almost 2,000 M1s went to the Persian Gulf during Desert Storm, and all but 18 came back in working condition.
No kidding. Wow.
So that, I think a record like that speaks for itself.
Sure. Yeah, that's very impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, we've been asked not to tell you in too much detail how to operate tanks. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. No one asked us that. But things are looking good. Things are looking good for tanks because in the future, we're going to see a lot more innovation there. You know, maybe we'll have completely unmanned tanks, completely driverless.
Like the drone planes at this point.
Right, like the drone planes. Mm-hmm. Maybe, like our buddy Josh Clark writes in an article on our website, maybe we'll be able to coat the tank with a silicon that will make it invisible.
Really?
Like Predator style.
Really?
Yeah.
Invisible tanks.
That's what people are hoping.
Crazy.
They can do.
Yeah.
And that's a long time away, I think.
Called the chameleon or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
Well, you got to add some numbers and letters at the end to make it official. Chameleon 43A6.
Sounds good.
Sounds good. Yeah. But that's pretty much all I got on tanks
right now.
All right,
cool. Very good.
What do you think?
That's good to me. Yeah, I mean, that's far more than I knew, and you had the history with them. I mean, you were able to climb around them and play on them, and the only place I ever really saw tanks were state fairs and things mm-hmm. like that, you know, where they have National Guard demonstration-type stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have much tank experience at all.
But, again, they're amazing machines. And you know what? We should put a call out if anybody else wants to hear more about military vehicles.
We have a lot of military listeners. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if any of them have experience in a tank, I mean, I think that'd be great if we could hear from somebody who's, you know, been in that seat and can tell us what it's like, or, somebody that has been a commander of a tank, or, mm-hmm. you know, a loader or a gunner. Just tell us what it's all about, what it's like in that tank, and you know, how safe do you feel relatively, you know, compared to, you know, some of the ground soldiers or, you know, people driving the Humvees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you feel better or about the same? By
and,
chances.
And if let's go ahead and apologize in advance, Scott. If we got anything wrong, please do correct us.
Oh yeah.
On this. Yeah.
Yeah, do correct us, because you know that's the thing. These things are advancing so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
They're just especially now. You know, like they say that during wartime or when all these advancements are made.
Yes.
In military technology, just rapid fire. I mean, they're quick changes, and they make them, you know, sometimes overnight. Mm-hmm. There's a good chance that some of the information that we had is outdated already. And, you know, even if we found something earlier this week, it's a good chance it's changed. So, let us know. Let us know always if there's a correction. Hey, check this out. We got something new that I think you might be interested in, because you're an iPhone guy, right?
I am an iPhone guy.
Right, we've got a brand new app. It's called the HowStuffWorks.com app. And it does all kinds of crazy stuff. I mean, you've learned about it too, right?
Yeah, this is a way that you can carry around some of the coolest parts of our websites and our podcast in one handy device. You can use it in an iPhone. You can use it in an iPad. You can use it in an iPod Touch. And here's my favorite part. It's free.
No kidding. And you can get articles, videos, all kinds of stuff like that. You can listen to Car Stuff, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And you can even check in on the blog and see what we're saying on Facebook and Twitter, too, right?
Right. So that's our new How Stuff Works app for iPhone, iPad, iPod Touch. Check it out, guys.
Sounds cool.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com. And be sure to check out the new High Speed Stuff blog, now on the How Stuff Works homepage.